ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 2, Text 11, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Ashochan Anvasochaha Tvam Pragya Vadan Cha Bhashase Gata Asun Agata Asun Cha Na Anushochanti Panditaha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Ashochanandasochastvam Pragyavadanscha Bhashase Gatasunagatasunscha Nanushochanti Panditaha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Asochan Anvasochastvam Pragyavadanscha Bhashase Gatasunagatasunscha Nanushochanti Panditaha. Translation: The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for that which is what is not. You are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Purport: The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, you are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. That's a very good definition, huh? Knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. So we find within Bhagavad Gita repeatedly, Krishna speaks about gyan. Gyanam teham savijnanam idam bhakshyami asheshata. Krishna says, I will now speak to you jnana, knowledge, and vijnana, realized knowledge. I'll now speak to you it in detail. So what does knowledge mean? Knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology. Sociology here, I take to mean social considerations. But he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the Supreme is more, even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body. With these words, Lord Krishna will begin his instruction, knowledge. Knowledge means to know the difference, spirit and matter, the difference between both and the controller of both. So Krishna will begin this teaching now. Now, the scenario we can see, Arjuna is pouring his heart out to Krishna. Arjuna is not usually very sentimental in the sense of being sentimental, of course, he has feeling, but Kshatriya has to be tough, has to be hard, sometimes apparently unfeeling. That is described that Krishna and Arjuna, they went hunting in the forest, and Arjuna was killing so many animals, and Srila Prabhupada explained that the Kshatriya has to go and practice killing. Because you have to kill humans, and it's if someone's not accustomed to killing, it becomes traumatic. So Arjuna was no wimp, but seeing the situation in front of him, he became overwhelmed. Shoka, what is that? Shoka samvigna manasaha. His mind became overwhelmed by lamentation, compassion for the people that he would have to kill. Of course, it could happen that he would be killed with the first arrow of the battle. It's quite possible. But it wasn't expected at all that Arjuna would be killed immediately. So he's expressing what he feels to be higher principles, that somehow in all this lead up to the battle, everyone had overlooked, everyone had forgotten, and all of a sudden Arjuna has a higher realization, and he pours his heart out to Krishna. He's not just speaking on the platform of logic and morals, but he feels it very strongly. And Krishna is shocked. Why are you talking this nonsense? Anarya jushta klaibhyang masmagama partha Naitatvayupapadyate, Shudrang, Hridya, Bidarbalyam, Tyaktvotishtaparantapa. Why have you become like a eunuch? Arjuna, you were cursed to become a eunuch. You already had 1 year as a eunuch. And now again you're talking like a eunuch. What is this? To call a kshatriya a eunuch is the worst possible insult to him. And for Arjuna to be, he was cursed to become a eunuch for 1 year. And that was the worst possible curse that could be given to a kshatriya, or maybe to have a sex change operation, which, well, that happened, isn't it? There's Illa, who was, that's in there in the 8th canto, I believe it is. Buddha became Illa. He was a king who became, no, Buddha married Illa, but she was originally the king, whose name I don't remember. So, Arjuna is speaking with all the passion of his soul. I say he's not sentimental, it doesn't mean he's not passionate. He's passionate in the sense that you're going to kill, you've got to put your heart and soul into it. Fighting is not a matter, it's not playing a computer game. It's for real. There are no imaginary enemies on the screen, it's for real. So Krishna responded with equal passion because he feels so much for Arjuna. He is shocked that Arjuna is speaking in such a ridiculous way. To Arjuna it didn't seem ridiculous, of course, but Krishna will, throughout the course of Bhagavad Gita, he'll show Arjuna why Arjuna is speaking in such a crazy way, as if he's speaking like a learned person, but actually he's talking like a fool. So Krishna immediately chastises him. It's not the chastisement of an adversary. It's not the chastisement of someone who just wants to make fun of you. If you call someone a fool, sometimes you do that just to make fun of someone. But Krishna's very, very serious. Arjuna is very serious. Krishna is very serious. And Krishna expresses that when he's speaking to Arjuna, he said, he's not saying, oh, come on, Arjuna. He's not like that. He's very serious with him from the very beginning. So this is required in the study of Bhagavad Gita. It's not just an intellectual study. It affects every one of us deeply. What Krishna speaks about in Bhagavad Gita affects us totally. It describes actually who we are, how we're suffering in this world, how we are obliged, or if we have any intelligence at all, we have to make a solution to the problems of life. We have to utilize this human form of life. Krishna says this again to Uddhava, when he speaks to Uddhava, Labdva sudurlava midam bahu sambhavante manusham artharam anityam apihadhira turnam yatetana patetanumritya yava nishrayasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasya. Very important verse. You should all learn this verse. That having attained this very rare human form of life after many, many births, one should not waste it for sense gratification, which is available in every form of life, but should do whatever is required so that one does not have to get born again. And don't delay. Turnam yateta. Do it quickly. Don't put it off. So this same urgency we find in the way Srila Prabhupada presents Bhagavad Gita as it is, in all of his books. It's not just a scholarly study. It is a scholarly study, but it's not just a scholarly study. Can you sit like this? That's better. Yeah. That also helps to keep the attention and also helps to keep me more inspired, because I see you flopping like this. It makes me feel that you're not interested. You probably are interested, but it's called body language. So, in Srila Prabhupada's words also, you can hear the way he speaks. He had the foresight to record, to buy a tape recorder when he had no money, practically, but he bought a tape recorder because he knew that what he was speaking was an important message. Srila Prabhupada went to the Western world on the order of his guru, but it wasn't just a matter of duty. Oh, my guru said, okay, I'll go check it out, see what it's like. But we can understand, we can hear the way he speaks, that he really wants everyone he comes in contact with to be Krishna conscious. You can hear those early talks in 1966. Before he had any followers, it's almost as if he's imploring the people who are listening to him to take to Krishna consciousness. They're casual visitors. They come, they listen. Yeah, kind of interesting. And there's a Swami. Let's go and hear what he has to say. Not at all committed. Srila Prabhupada wants them to be committed, to take Krishna consciousness seriously. Right now, turanam yateta. Why? Because anitya, this life is temporary. We don't know. Death can come at any moment. Death will come. When? We don't know. Anything can happen anytime. There's actually to be in this consciousness, that's very helpful, to know that we can die at any time. Otherwise, the nature of Maya is we feel comfortable. Everything's okay. Life's going on, routine, and all right. And then we become not serious about our real duty or what we really need to do to utilize this human form of life. Kamala dala jala jivana talamala. This song, Bhaja Hure Mana, time to time, we should sing this. So you have the whole understanding of Krishna consciousness in one short song. That is to be understood, that life, it's like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. It can drop down anytime. The drop of water, anyway, it's not really connected with the lotus leaf at all. It might be sitting on the lotus leaf, but it's not connected, and it will fall. So in this way, edhana jovana putra parijana iteki ache paratitire. all these things. We shouldn't put faith in our wealth, our youth, our family members. Don't put faith in all these. Don't put any confidence in these things, because they're also like drops of water on a lotus leaf. It's going to fall. We don't know when. It will do. We don't know when, but certainly it will. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada, he often gave the example of goats who are about to be slaughtered. I don't think this is a traditional example. It might be. Most of the examples that Srila Prabhupada gave actually are traditional examples, like the frog in the well, or the duck going behind the testicles of the bull, thinking that it's something which will fall for him to eat. So most of these are traditional examples, but this might have been from Srila Prabhupada's own personal experience. Because within my experience in Bengal, more than any other part of India, you see a lot of goats, because a lot of Muslims in Bengal, they like to eat goats. And the Hindus have picked up the habit also, some of them. So you see goats being driven to slaughter. And Srila Prabhupada had this experience that they're being slaughtered one by one, and in the meantime, those who are waiting to be slaughtered, actually they should see, this one got slaughtered, then the next one. In the meantime, they're having sex. As if, let's enjoy while we can. Or they're just oblivious to the fact that they're going to be slaughtered because of we're having sex. So, of course, the goat is not a philosopher. He doesn't think that enjoy while you can. He doesn't think about it in a manner of structured thought. But he should see. He should be afraid. But he's not afraid, because he's a fool. He's no intelligence. So human beings shouldn't be like that. They should see, I'm going to have to die, and then I'm going to have to be born again and suffer again and again. But due to animalistic foolishness, even getting the human form of life, we continue to be as foolish as the goats who are being taken to slaughter. Now that verse is there, Ladva Sudurlabham, that we should take to Krishna consciousness, having achieved this rare human form of life. But there's another verse which Krishna says that in the same talks to Uddhava, that even if we take to Krishna consciousness, or we take to the process by which we can become free from birth and death, that doesn't mean it's all that okay, it's that everything is guaranteed. Because even after taking to Krishna consciousness, we can lapse into Maya. In this regard, Lord Krishna states that there's the example of the boat, Nridehamadyang, Sudabang Sudurabam, Plavansakalpo. Gukarnatharam mayanukulena nabasvateritam puman bhavadim napnatarit saatmaha. Lord Krishna gives the example that the human body is like a suitable boat for crossing the ocean of material existence. So there are many different kinds of boats. In the same way, there are many different kinds of bodies in material existence. There are toy boats. You're not going to cross them. No one's going to cross anything with a toy boat. You can have a toy boat. You can have a little rowing boat. You're not going to cross any ocean in a rowing boat. There are little boats, big boats. But the boat of the human body is very suitable for. It's especially suitable for crossing the ocean of material existence. There are different boats for different functions. Toy boats are for little boys to play with. Little girls don't play with toy boats. Little boys do. then there may be a boat, a ferry boat, just for crossing a little river. Or there may be a big ferry boat, just maybe a rowing boat for pleasure, for fun, going around the lake. They don't have that lake in Zagreb. They don't have boats. There's no boating, huh? Only fishing. It's only kept for fishing. Yeah. Yeah. So they're pleasure boats, and then they're boats which are meant for taking freight, little freighters, and then there are oil tankers, huge oil tankers. They're all made for different purposes, but the human body is like a boat which is specially made for crossing the terrible ocean of material existence. So it's even getting a suitable boat, it's not guaranteed that one's going to cross the ocean. But if one has a good captain, that makes things much better. And the captain should know what are the favorable winds. He should know how to utilize the winds for crossing the ocean. So the captain is like the guru, who knows what are the favorable winds, which means the instructions that Krishna gives in Shastra. So if one has all these facilities but still fails to cross the ocean of birth and death, Krishna says such a person is killing himself. It's just like you're on a boat, you've been detained in a foreign land for as long as you can remember, and even before you can remember, you've been tortured, you've been insulted. Now you're given the boat to cross over the ocean, and simply you jump from the boat and commit suicide. You jump into the ocean full of sharks. So this is the situation. So the same thing, Ashara Dhana Purusha, Dharmasyasya Parantapa, Aprapya Mangdevartante, Mrityu Sangsara Vartante. Krishna says here in Bhagavad Gita, that a person who does not remain faithful on the path of Krishna consciousness returns to repeated birth and death in this material world. So it's like that. We may be in Krishna consciousness and we don't take it very seriously. Maya is always trying to convince us to jump off the boat. Maya may paint a different boat. A boat which looks like the right, it looks like it can cross the ocean. She may give us a guru who we think he looks very good, but he's not right. Maya is always trying to take away our commitment. Maya has two basic functions. Yaya samohito jiva, atmanan trigunatmaka. The Maya, by manifesting the three modes of material nature, she keeps everyone in illusion. This is called the avaranatmika vritti, her potency to cover everyone with illusion. And then if someone tries to come out of that illusion, she has a prakshepatmika vritti. So prakshepa means to kick. You want to come out? Kick, get back. like the sheep in a corral, and fenced in, and then the gate opens and one or two sheep try to escape, and the shepherd may just kick them back in. You get back there where you belong. But so in the same way, Maya is, she'll try to compromise our faith, saying that in various ways, saying, no, this Krishna consciousness is all wrong, you don't believe all of that, it's just brainwashing, and why don't you enjoy yourself? You don't have to take it so seriously. What's wrong with drinking a little wine now and then? You don't have to get drunk, but just drink a little wine. Every civilized person does that, right? Here in Croatia, everyone drinks a little wine, isn't it? Except the devotees, probably. Pretty much everyone. But maybe some of the devotees do too, because they think, well, what's that? It's good for health. It helps digestion. And it's good, tastes nice, and I go to visit my friends, they offer a glass of wine, it can't be antisocial, and you don't get drunk, so what's the harm? The harm is punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. We remain in this cycle of birth and death. The harm is that we go against Krishna's injunctions. We go against the vows that we have taken. It impedes our Krishna consciousness. Even without so grossly falling down, well, many devotees or those who have been practicing seriously, they may think, well, that's a small thing, it's a minor thing. Isn't that, you find devotees like that here in Croatia who, they drink a little wine now and then. They'll come to Janmashtami celebration and drink a little wine. They don't think it's a very gross fall down. But even there may be more subtle fall downs. It may not even be a fall down. It may not be a fall down, but it's also not a go up. The opposite of falling down is going up, right? So we may be living in the ashram and just having, you know, just get a little comfortable spot and do a little service and take life at our own rate. But if we take life at our own pace, then that's not tivrena bhakti yogena. It's not the intense devotional service that we need to go back home, back to Godhead. It's like these space rockets, you need a lot of firepower to get them out of the Earth's atmosphere. You need a lot of power to get out. If you put the same amount of firepower that you use for a fireworks rocket, obviously it's not going to work at all. This huge amount of energy is required to get out of the Earth's atmosphere. In the same way, to get out of Maya's atmosphere requires intense effort. There may even be some kind of philosophy that makes us take it easy. The idea that, well, we just get the mercy of the Guru and we just go on in our Krishna consciousness in a routine kind of way, and by the mercy of the Guru, everything is made up. That we don't really have to endeavor that hard, and we can just chant a little and go on with life, and we'll be good devotees, but you know, don't be too fanatical, right? You've heard that before, don't be too fanatical. So, but this idea that, yeah, I'll get the Guru's mercy, but it's not automatic. Guru's mercy comes to those who are very sincere. The idea that we can live a life of not very gross, but live a comfortable life, chant Hare Krishna. My comfort is also very important to me. Or there's no need to really struggle hard. Just take it easy, work at your own capacity. This kind of talk that makes us take Krishna consciousness not as seriously as we should do, and think that, well, just anyway, Krishna is very merciful, Krishna will make it up. But if we're not very serious to go to Krishna, why should Krishna be very serious to pick us up? If we're not very serious to fully surrender to Krishna, then we're not fit to enter the spiritual world. So Srila Prabhupada always instilled this feeling of urgency, and he pushed his disciples. You surrender to Krishna. He gave them service to do. Surrender, surrender. Don't sit still. Work hard. Of course, he also wanted that devotees follow the basic sadhana. So it was a very demanding life in many ways, the life that Srila Prabhupada gave, because he gave basic sadhana plus a lot of hard work. And he was always pushing surrender. And even, of course, Srila Prabhupada was very appreciative of the service that his disciples did, but he didn't let them become complacent. He wanted more and more and more from them. So Srila Prabhupada is pushing. He said this is a pushing movement. He said, "I just like my Guru Maharaj is pushing me, I'm pushing you, and you should push others." So we also have to bring that sense of urgency to others. We want to bring people to Krishna consciousness, and we treat people nicely if they're interested and this and that. But at the same time, we have to impart a sense that this Krishna consciousness is not like some mumbo-jumbo what do they call that, motivational guru, and just some platitudes, be nice, feel nice, smile, it increases your face value, and all this rubbish ideas that these cheating gurus, they float around to make you feel good. Our aim is not to make people feel good in a superficial way, but to make them feel good in the real way, which is Savai Pung Sang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Dhokshajaya Haitukya Pratihataya Yatma Supersedati. Only by completely surrendering to Krishna without any personal motive, 24 hours a day, 365 and a quarter days a year, only in this way can we be fully satisfied, can we feel good. And trying to make people feel good on the mundane platform is a method of cheating. So all these motivating you to be an idiot, yeah, that you, yeah, I achieved, I got to make some achievement, I got to do some, motivate you to remain in this material world, to forget the purpose of life. This is all nonsense. So we have to preach also in this way. As Srila Prabhupada preached to us, and he inspired devotees. It wasn't just giving by some inspirational talks that he stood in front of a mirror and practiced how to give inspirational talks. No such thing. But because Srila Prabhupada was he so much wanted to bring Krishna consciousness to others that manifested as his whole movement in his sending devotees, inexperienced devotees. He sent them on missions which even very experienced devotees would consider to be a very tough thing, to go, sending them out to all different parts of the world, opening new centers, distributing books in the cold of the winter, long hours, day after day. Srila Prabhupada, he pushed his disciples in this way because he wanted them to surrender to Krishna, and he wanted others also to come to Krishna consciousness. So he didn't make life easy for his disciples. And disciple doesn't mean an easygoing life. Srila Prabhupada wrote that advancement in Krishna consciousness and an easygoing life do not go well together. Now, it's not saying that everyone has to take a deliberate difficulty. Okay, bring in the bed of nails, right? That's the famous stereotype of Indian yogis lying on a bed of nails. We're not going to do that. We don't unnecessarily make things difficult, but at the same time we have to preach Krishna consciousness, which means voluntarily accepting difficulties in the service of Krishna. And then Krishna being pleased with us, being pleased with our endeavor, then he will make the impossible possible. Krishna can do anything. Even the Krishna's great power is manifested in this world. How? How is it? Have you seen? You don't get extreme weather here, right? You don't get earthquakes here or floods. Floods occasionally, yeah. It's tsunamis. It's not possible for a tsunami because the Adriatic coast is protected by Italy, isn't it? Yeah, it's closed up, probably. There must be some term for that. Something like a lagoon, but it's too big to be called a lagoon. So you don't get extreme weather is uncommon here. But if you see an earthquake and all the buildings shaking and tumbling to the ground, or you see a tsunami just sweep over, and we may think that, or we see a comet in the sky. We say this is an exhibition of Krishna's power. But the greatest exhibition of his power is described by, or a major exhibition of his power is described by Shukdev Goswami. In his prayers before he starts reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukdev says, Kiratuhun Andhra Pulinda Pulkasha abhira shumbha yavana kasadaya yene japa pa yada pa shraya shraya shudhyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. He says that Krishna is so powerful that even not directly, but through the agency of his devotees, Krishna empowers his devotees in such a way that even the most fallen people, who are practically not even humans, they're so uncultured and uncivilized, they can all attain to devotional service. So this is Krishna's highest power, more than his spectacular power of creating, maintaining and destroying millions of universes, is his power to even through his, not even directly, but through his devotees, to lift up the fallen. So Srila Prabhupada did that, but it wasn't by just talking some philosophy. Srila Prabhupada personally worked hard. He wanted others to be, he seriously wanted others to be uplifted, just like Krishna speaking to Arjuna. Krishna is very serious that he wants Arjuna to understand what he says. Tat Srinu, Krishna tells Arjuna, just listen to what I'm saying here. Maya sakta manaf partha yogam yunjan madashraya asangshayam samagrang mang yata gyasasi. Tat Srinu, Krishna tells Arjuna, now just listen. I've been telling you all this stuff about karma and detachment and all this kind of thing and yoga. Now I just told you the real yoga is being my devotee. So being madgate na antaratmana shradhavan bhajate yo mam. The best yogi is the one who from the core of his heart with full faith worships me. So be like that, Arjuna. Take full shelter of me and just listen to what I have to say. Then at last you can get free from all these foolish doubts. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, come on, listen, be serious. And then Krishna then empowered Arjuna, as he always empowered Arjuna. Arjuna, even before coming to Kurukshetra for the battle, he had won so many battles. How did he do that? That was by the empowerment of Krishna. So we're not Arjuna. But we are supposed to follow the example of Arjuna. Krishna can empower us also. Mukam karoti vachalang pangung langhayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande shri gurundinatarnam paramananda madhavam. By the grace of the Guru, by the grace of the supremely blissful husband of the goddess of fortune, Krishna, we also can do the impossible. Just as Krishna can empower a dumb person to recite poetry, a lame man to cross over mountains, so Krishna can empower even us who are so fallen and far away from him, that he can empower us even in this very lifetime to become completely purified and go back to Godhead. He can empower us to impart that spirit to others also. So this process, we should read Srila Prabhupada's books, and then the urgency we feel in Srila Prabhupada in every line, just as Krishna is urging Arjuna, give up, klaibyam masmagavai, Tagdavatishta, get up, give up all these nonsense ideas. Get up, get to work, get to. So Krishna is with great feeling imparting knowledge to Arjuna so that Arjuna can be benefited. Srila Prabhupada had the same mood with us, and he really wanted us to imbibe that seriousness in devotional service. Is there any question about this? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada's miracle. It's just amazing how practically useless people, hippies, they were doing nothing, just smoking dope, and Prabhupada turned them into acharyas, working hard. They didn't do a day's work in their life, many of them. And then Srila Prabhupada had them working harder even than the kamis, but working for Krishna. Prabhupada's miracle. Oh, she has a question. Please ask.
Ja bih pitala, sad smo govorili kako je Srila Prabhupada htio dovesti svjesnost Krišne što većem broju ljudi. Pa me zanima samo da li bi onda naša misija bila danas da mi širimo svjesnost Krišne samo do određenih duša koje se moraju vratiti Bogu, budući da smo sad u Kali Jugi i ne možemo Kali Jugu pretvoriti u spiritualnu civilizaciju ili u Satya Jugu.
Looks like you don't understand the question.
She is saying that Srila Prabhupada said that we should Srila Prabhupada's mood was to spread Krishna consciousness to everybody. So what is our mission? Is our mission to spread Krishna consciousness to a certain number of souls who should go back to Godhead, or to everybody? Since this is Kali Yuga and most of the people are very...
Seems like you don't really understand the question, and I don't either. Because she already said Prabhupada wanted to spread Krishna consciousness to everybody, so... And then questioning that.
What should we do? What is our...
What should we do? Janna sata kari karo para upaka. Sit properly. Make our life successful and try to work for the benefit of others. Life successful means by Krishna consciousness. Do what we can to help this mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. Whether everyone comes or no one comes, we should try. Yeah, you have a question.
Hare Krishna. I want to ask you, I reading Instagram page for this temple, and there is a lot of Swamis have their own page on Instagram, and they put some things like quotes, just like you said, and the quotes are like, Krishna is love and love is everything, so there's just like some stupid quotes and how to interpret, how to understand.
I don't know what you're talking about specifically, but the general principle is that we should hear the parampara message and repeat it. What we've received from Srila Prabhupada, which Srila Prabhupada received from his predecessors, we should repeat it. We also, Srila Prabhupada gave room for doing that in a manner that is suitable for others to receive the message. So it may not be exactly word for... If we meet someone comes to the temple and you just start reading to them from the book, that won't work. You have to present it in a manner that's suitable for their understanding. But I can't say exactly unless you give a specific quote. But the basic principle is that we present the message as it is received in parampara without changing. The wording and the manner of presentation may change, but the essence of the message should not change. Srila Prabhupada didn't present in exactly the same verbal style as did his guru. It's very different, but the message is the same.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. But if I don't know if anyone wrote that, but if you say Krishna is love and love is everything, so what? Everything is Krishna. Sounds a bit vague. Well, in one sense it's true, everything is Krishna. In one sense. Love is everything, but that's a different use of the word everything. Anyway, I don't know, because it sounds like you made it up on the spot also. Is it?
Paraphrasing.
Paraphrasing, yeah. All right. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas chakipa sindhu vyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.